Oh, the posh, posh, travelling life, the travelling life for me. First cabin and captain's table, regal company. Whenever I'm bored, I travel abroad, but ever so properly. Port out, starboard home, posh with a capital P. Oh,
you're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIPC.
The hands that hold
it's
the scepter.
It's great to be back in Indianapolis. I am your the hatchet broadcaster, Ethan Hatcher. That's producer Carl sitting opposite me, pushing the buttons and doing the things to make the show function. And boy, I'm so grateful to be back in the city. It was harrowing, to say the least. I wasn't entirely sure I would make it for tonight's broadcast. I'll explain in just a minute. But first, we're going to preview what's coming up. Of course, Wish TV has announced the first televised mayoral debate in more than 20 years. What they're billing as the first mayoral debate of this election cycle should be interesting. The city is bragging about a disastrous plan that is going to slow traffic to a halt and enshrine gridlock as a permanent feature of travel in Indianapolis. Also, a major factory coming to Edinburgh, potentially. All this and more coming up on Saturday night on The Circle. But like I said, I wasn't even sure I was going to make it for tonight's broadcast because I took a trip over Labor Day to Pennsylvania visiting friends for a couple of reasons, to visit them and also to check out a phenomenal phonograph exhibition just outside of Baltimore in Maryland. But on the way, my vehicle broke down. And the worst thing that could happen to a truck, too, the transmission failed. Like, I didn't even figure out what was going on until I already got off the Pennsylvania Turnpike because I was listening to the radio and had that thing cranked up. So I wasn't hearing the grinding that evidently must have been getting progressively louder as I traveled the nearly 525-mile journey to just outside of Harrisburg. It was nuts and very unfortunate, but I'm glad to be here. Oh, producer Carl, would you believe this? I posted about it on Facebook, and this is proof that WIBC really does have the greatest listeners in the world. Some of the listeners offered to bail me out and send me money to get me out of Pennsylvania. I appreciate it endlessly, but fortunately, I didn't have to rely on the listeners because that's what grandparents are for. Grandparents in times of emergency sent me the funds, fortunately, to get the vehicle at least looked at and taken care of, but it's back in Pennsylvania. I gotta go back.
So what are you taking to go back to Pennsylvania?
That's a matter of great debate, Carl. I could take the bus, could take the train, could take a plane, or I could rent another $300 automobile. By the way, Enterprise, what a bunch of unhelpful asshats they were.
They're not a sponsor of ours, are they?
I hope not, no. but it was a miserable experience, to say the least. I trot into one of these, you know, little facilities to try and rent a vehicle, and they're like, they're basically, we don't rent cars here, sir.
What?
Right. Well, we don't do, you know, in-state trips only. We don't do out-of-state, and I had to book it over the phone, and believe it or not, when you do book a rental car over the phone, at least you will be able to find that service through Enterprise. So made it home, vehicle's in Pennsylvania. I have to get a transmission replacement, a clutch replacement, get an oil change too, just throw that in there.
I was hoping that you were going to come back in that little Japanese truck that you were showing on social media.
Oh, isn't that so cool? That was my buddy. He let me drive around his Japanese rig. It's actually imported from overseas. Yeah. Those things are neat, but man, my knees were knocking against the dash. I could not drive one of those things
safely. I don't know if it's even road safe on our interstates either.
Yeah. Well, it not when I'm driving it.
No, didn't look safe.
But making it back home. And again, the phonograph exhibit that I saw in Baltimore, I posted some photos of it online. Phenomenal. I mean, I can't understate the uniqueness of the machines that were being displayed. A collector in the community, Charlie Hummel, passed away, sadly, before I had the opportunity to meet him. And he had just a fantastic collection of one-of-a-kind Edison machines, stuff that date all the way back to the very first reproduction of sound in, like, the 1870s. So these are low production number, you know, models, very early in the career of sound reproduction. And and very few surviving, and he had them. It was crazy to see them not only displayed but also demonstrated, and sound recorded on a tinfoil. Like, that's just, oh, it's so cool. I like stuff like that. Obviously, I geeked out on it. Fortunately, I was able to limp the truck with transmission problems to Baltimore and back from Harrisburg. But then, yeah, had to leave it at the mechanic. Anyway, we got a lot of interesting stuff that I was missing out on while I was dealing with mechanical issues in Pennsylvania, potentially getting stranded. Like, I couldn't even find a repair shop until Tuesday because of the Labor Day holiday. Like, this thing craps the bed on Saturday night.
It's the worst time for your car to break down.
Yeah. It was a nightmare. And meanwhile, I'm missing out on all the Indiana politics, including apparently Wish TV announcing what they're billing as the first mayoral debate between Joe Hogsnot and Jefferson Shreve.
Your Vote 2023. Wish TV is proud to announce we will host the first live televised debate in the 2023 Indianapolis mayoral race. Joe Hogsett and Jefferson Shreve have agreed to a one-hour debate here at the Wish TV studios on October 23rd.
Wait a minute. October 23rd? That's an interesting phrasing. Now, what, producer Carl, comes to mind or is implied by first mayoral debate?
That there's going to be more than one?
Right. There's going to be more than one. But if this is on October 23rd, are they going to have more than one a week? Are they going to do it next week on the 30th? The election's on the 7th.
How about here on Saturday night on the Circle?
Sure. Well, this is the first televised debate in more than 20 years, which blew my mind. I guess I didn't realize that. Has city politics in Indianapolis been so predictable and unremarkable for so long that they didn't need a televised broadcast of the debate? This is...
Well, okay. The question, I was listening to Abdul's show, is the question whether or not either one's going to show up for the debate. So we'll see.
Well, I mean, they committed themselves. What the question that comes to my mind is, of course, the hosts, Phil Sanchez and Katira Winfrey, they're going to be moderating. And I wonder if Phil Sanchez is going to ask the question we all want to know, is where was Hogsett during the riots?
The answer is going to be no. He's not going to ask that question.
But that's why you need to be there.
WIBC and Channel 8 are news partners.
Why would that question not be asked in a mayoral?
Because they lose access. That's the problem. That's why journalism is not journalism anymore. They lose access.
Now, another disaster that's set to befall us. I'm not sure if you've seen this, Carl. Mayor Hogsnot was bragging with Andre Carson and the rest of the Good Time Fun Brigade at the city council about this mutilation of our roadways. They're turning 8 one-way roads into two-way throughfares in the city. And this is going to grind traffic to a halt. It's a problem. And they're billing it as a way to slow down traffic and also as a boon to local businesses, which I think is kind of a tenuous connection to make, but it's going to make crossing these neighborhoods infinitely more dangerous. And another justification I've seen is like, oh, well, that's going to really cut down on the amount of people driving the wrong way on a one-way road. Newsflash, morons, they drive the wrong way on a two-way road too. It's not going to improve things. What it's going to do is it's going to create gridlock in the city, and it's going to basically, as a means of social engineering, force you to rely on their failed projects like the Red Line, because if it's too frustrating to get across town in a car, maybe you'll hop on an electric bus instead. Incidentally, that also poorly thought out, since it's fracturing the concrete because they didn't account for the weight of the buses. Everything in this administration poorly thought out, and it's crazy that the Hogsnot administration has essentially been a one-man wrecking crew across the city that I loved. It's barely recognizable from what it looked like in 2015, and it's just a darn shame that Jefferson Shreve is the candidate that we're left with when he, instead of attacking Hogsnot on his weak points, decides to go after law-abiding citizens as part of his foundational policy positions.
So that's the question about the debate. They agreed on so many things.
Yeah, that's going to be another problem. Well, I guess we'll have to tune in, and you can catch the highlights here analyzed in detail on Saturday night on The Circle. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more to come, including perhaps a happy announcement for jobs coming to outside of Indianapolis. In Edinburgh, a major facility may be moving in. I'll tell you more coming up next.
I'm afraid exposure is the only answer. It's the opinion of the entire staff that Dexter is criminally insane.
You're listening to Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
That boy needs therapy.
Thanks for tuning in to Saturday Night on The Circle. Find my podcasts uploaded to SaturdayNightOnTheCircle.fireside.fm or WIBC.com. You can also find my whiteboard drawings uploaded there to the show page. Producer Carl, beep, 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 pushing the buttons and doing the things to make the show function. We begin with a surprising news flash. Apparently, our prosecutor does know how to file criminal offenses. This was shocking. He pressed charges against the great Magic the Gathering gaming card heist of the Gen Con convention. Did you hear about this, Producer Carl? Nearly $300,000 in trading cards absconded with by these two New York rapscallions who had nary a thing to do with Gen Con. This is heist of the century.
I'm glad he's making the streets of Indianapolis safer.
Right? Now, you know, that's what I said. I applaud that he's going after some ne'er-do-wells. Now do this with the violent criminal offenders. Please?
That might be asking too much.
Right. Well, they caught up with these guys pretty quick. I guess they stole the goods August 1st before the convention had even started. Took a pallet jack and just hauled them away, I guess, and later drove them off in their own vehicle to New York. Must have planned it ahead of time because they weren't even convention goers or vendors at the venue. But they clearly had a hankering for Magic the Gathering trading cards and were quickly caught up with involving New York State Police, who joined in on the investigation and later caught up with 115 stolen boxes of gaming cards and books from Gen Con. Now, like, how big were those boxes? Did they already sell most of the goods? Like, did this go off over eBay and they made the profit and this was what was left? Or are these rather relatively large boxes? Like, $260,000 of trading cards. You'd think that there's a volume of this, or are they that valuable? I need to go to Gen Con and find out the answers to these questions.
Clearly, the DA is probably a Gen Conner. Like, he's into it. So this is why he was focused on it.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Just like the governor and his pro basketball policy that always worms its way through the General Assembly because he likes basketball. So, you know, the prosecutor, he likes Gen Con, you know, maybe plays Magic the Gathering or Dungeons and Dragons, one of the other board games. And that's why he's going after this. That is an insightful observation, Producer Carl. I like that. Now, I did say that we were potentially getting a rather large expansion to jobs, a huge food and beverage facility owned by King's Hawaiian, proposed for at a location just south of Edinburgh in German Township. I mean, this thing is huge. It's called Project Whiteboard. They're going to be the first manufacturers in this 532,000 square foot food and beverage production facility that includes a 368,000 foot manufacturing facility with 78,000 square feet of cold beverage storage. Like, this is serious stuff. And I appreciate anytime jobs are brought to the Hoosier homeland. So in honor of this proposition, which, as I understand it, hasn't been approved yet, I brought some delicious King's Hawaiian rolls, dinner rolls, the sweet rolls you get at Thanksgiving, they're fantastic, to the studio so Carl and I can enjoy them.
Thank you, Ethan.
King's Hawaiian, not a sponsor, but would sure be heck of privileged if they chose to be.
Yeah, should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sponsor Saturday Night on The Circle. We'll give you all the good press. Those are big, darn good dinner rolls,
right?
Yeah,
they are. They're great.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Just a little bit.
They're better than that conservative chocolate that you brought the other day for like $25 a bar.
Mm-hmm. Considerably cheaper too.
Yeah,
I think that was what was it like $5 a bar? That's mm-hmm. like $5 for the whole package of 12 dinner rolls. Like that'll get you taken care of. So yeah, King's Hawaiian, it would be great if they moved just south of Edinburgh, because think about how many jobs you can stuff mm-hmm. in a 500,000 square foot manufacturing facility. Like, that's a lot of bread, figuratively and literally.
Yeah.
Being King's Hawaiian.
Excuse the pun, yeah.
Right. Who else would go in there? That's what I want to know. Maybe some Coca-Cola? We always need another bottling mm-hmm. plant. That would be just fine and dandy, because there's a shortage of good paying jobs, you know? As a byproduct of the Biden economy, which now they're running on Bidenomics,
yeah.
Suddenly.
Yeah, we get to thank Joe. Something Joe that's Hogsett and
they,
Joe
they can
Biden.
Lean into. Now they can leave the California BS behind, but they can bring the jobs here. King's wine. Another thing that would potentially be a boon to the state, as I understand it, is being considered by the General Assembly, the economic impact of legalizing marijuana consumptions and in some way, whether that be recreational or medical. And look, business owners would hop on the opportunity, as was reported by Wish TV 8.
23 states have legalized recreational marijuana, and another 15 allow medical sales. Shadi Curry employs about 40 people at 8 Indy e-cigs locations and a hemp processing facility in Indianapolis. He says he'll expand if the state ever legalizes cannabis.
All the business owners like myself that would be investing in the cannabis space, the jobs that would create, the amount of money that would go back into enforcement, law enforcement, mental health treatments.
States where it's legal say recreational marijuana tax money funds education, roads, and other government services.
And really, that's what it all comes down to, doesn't it, is the tax money? Because that's why that was one of the big things in the early American colonies, is taxing alcohol production. taxing recreational substances has been part and parcel, essentially, of American policy since the dawn of the country. And if that's the way that we have to rationalize it to the General Assembly, so be it, because in those states that have legalized it, Michigan raked in $325 million in tax revenue from $1.9 billion in sales from last year alone. Illinois, our neighbor to the west, took in $445 million in tax revenue from $1.5 billion in sales. And like Traffic Director Matt Baer has proposed in the past, pot for potholes, you know? And if that's what gets the government to move, if there's one thing that would get the government to move, it is taxes.
Taxes! Taxes! Beautiful, lovely taxes!
And then, if nothing else, just the freedom for Americans to recreate in the way that they wish. If you're not harming anybody, like, what's the point? There's certainly more danger in the drunk drivers that kill a litany of people across the United States. It's basically the American pastime. What do you see parked out in front of those bars? Cars. That's how they get there. And then irresponsible choices are made. Whereas comparing, recreational marijuana, as far as I'm aware, there has never been a single reported fatality directly caused by the consumption.
I love smoking marijuana. It makes me feel fantastic, so I do it when I wanna. Y'all ain't gonna convince me weed is a bad thing, especially since you're so mad, man. And I'm cool, calm, collected, well respected, motivated, driven, wide awake and living, making a living with my God-given talent. Sally Ford, tally-ho, onward we go.
Onward we go with more Saturday Night on the Circle. Coming up next, of course, is the Hat Tricks with Hatcher segment. And boy, do I have some amazing clips lined up for you. We're checking back in with Green Jean-Pierre, as well as Mads Mikkelsen asked an especially baffling question about his 1700s Danish movie in production. So we'll catch up on all the details up next. Stay tuned to Saturday Night on the Circle.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Saturday Night on the Circle podcast. Be sure to catch us live every Saturday night from 7 to 9 Eastern on 93 WIBC Indianapolis, and watch us on the YouTube live stream where you can comment live with other fans.
Time goes slowly, but carries on, and now the best years have come and gone. You took me by surprise.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIPC.
This week, we'll be checking in with Press Secretary KJP as she tries to justify the disastrous missteps of the Biden administration, fielding a desperate distraction in the hopes of gaslighting away valid criticism. You'll also hear a heroic Nevada Ranger take charge in handling roadblocking climate numbskulls endangering citizens baking in the desert sun. And finally, a hilarious exchange with an unhinged reporter shows how far entertainment has fallen. And you'll hear it all for this week's edition of Hat Tricks with Hatcher.
It's time for another one of Hatcher's Hat Tricks.
The story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle, where I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher, and producer Carl pushes the buttons to make the show function. Thanks for tuning in, as usual. Let's check in with Karine Jean-Pierre. And according to her, Biden has a near telepathic connection, a laser-like focus on what Americans really need.
He has his finger on the pulse of what it is that the American people need. He talks about issues that really matter to the American people, and he is delivering. Is there more work to be done? There's always more work to be done, but we are happy to take that on.
Have you lost your reptilian ass mind?
Delivering? I think you mean roundly failing in nearly any area he addresses, be it the border, be it the economy, be it the withdrawal from Afghanistan, be it a basic press conference. The man can't argue his way out of a wet paper sack, let alone represent the country. Talk about his finger on the pulse. I think the White House doctor needs to have his finger on the Biden pulse to see if it's beating. Like, he's tripping up the stairs. It's basically like a Weekend at Bernie scenario. Yeah, producer Carl's laughing in the background because he knows it's true. Because it's basically a corpse walking. Like, let the man retire. It's cruel and unusual. It's elder abuse, I think people have called it. I agree. But Karine Jean-Pierre, not done. Also making a statement that, after the multiple boosters, after there's been multiple resurgences of COVID-19, clearly, vaccines work.
The experts feel that, again, we listen to the experts, CDC, FDA, they got to go through their process in getting these vaccines done and ready to go. That's going to be mid-September. September, I don't know, 5th? What is it? Right? So we're not far from that, from mid-September. And we're going to do our job as we do every time when it comes to new vaccine or anything, any of the tools that are out there. We're going to make sure that we encourage Americans to get those vaccines. We know that these vaccines work, right? We know when people say up to date with their vaccine, that works.
I think I can smell shite. Yes, I can definitely smell shite.
What do you mean the vaccines work? What do you mean after... Now, multiple years, remember the first round of vaccines, they said transmission would be totally prevented, and that was quickly disproven. And now it's not lessening the side effects. The side effects are basically a flu. So no, there is no point in going to get the billionth vaccine. The severity of the pandemic is done. So it is just ridiculous to see the administration lean on vaccines, which then, unfortunately has a side effect of diluting trust in real vaccines that do have efficacy. Like, look, polio vaccine, obviously works. Rabies vaccine obviously works. Tetanus vaccine, another good example of a vaccine that works. Vaccines are not bad, but when you oversaturate the market with vaccines of questionable efficacy, then you're unfortunately going to diminish the public's trust in what otherwise is a medically viable option. Now, another Democrat trying to run interference, Katie Porter from California, saying that Joe Biden is doing great with the economy.
President Biden has done a terrific job on the economy, and I think this is a matter of just people wanting to sort of dream up what they could imagine for different kinds of candidates at this point. But the truth is, Joe Biden has a terrific story to tell on the economy.
You serious?
A terrific story. I mean, gripping, but in a horrifying kind of way, like train derailments, supply chain issues, outrageous inflation, mortgage prices increasing as the interest rate rises. What are you talking about? He's got a lot to brag,
Ethan,
in the economy.
That's Trump's fault. It's from the previous administration.
Yep, I forgot. Blame it all on Trump. now...
You know, if those clips left you feeling dissatisfied and borderline nauseated, here's something that will warm your heart. I know it's a couple weeks old at this point, but I missed out. I wanted to play the Nevada Ranger taking charge with those climate numbskulls blocking a desert highway as they baked in the sun, and he just rams them through and gets them off the road. Oh, I love this.
Did anyone get that?
Yeah.
Carol.
You better move.
They changed.
Get out now. Get out. On the ground. All of you on the ground now. Get on the ground. Get on the ground. Don't move.
Mental illness is a political identity and always has been.
We're environmental protesters. She's screaming on the pavement as the officer is handcuffing her and dragging her off to the side of the road. Like, good on the Nevada Rangers. Now, as I understand it, this took place on a tribal reservation. So, but on the side of the vehicle, it said Nevada Ranger. So I guess they maybe state authority has a jurisdiction in the tribal reservation. I'm not sure. Either way, that's how you do it. That's how you get it done. And they can't say that they're quote unquote peaceful protesters. Like, yeah, they may be unarmed, but they are causing harm to the population by having them stuck baking in the Nevada desert, ground to a halt on the highway. It's unacceptable. What about emergency vehicles? What about people who need to get from point A to B? That's not a peaceful protest. Take your marches, take a climate protest, and take them off to the side of the road. It's that simple. Thanks for listening to 93 WIBC Saturday Night on the Circle. We got more clips to come, this time focusing our attention to the world of entertainment, where there was a reporter during an Atlanta premiere event for Creed 3. Michael B. Jordan, the director, was speaking with somebody, an interviewer that he knew in high school, and evidently made fun of him.
So, Shell, we got Michael B. Jordan, the director and the star of Creed 3. And, you know, we know each other. We go way back all the way to Chad Science in Newark, okay?
You're the corny kid, right?
Ooh. No, I did not say that. Misquoted for sure. No, you did not hear me say. I said we used to make fun of the name. But, yeah, he is obviously killing things out here.
Sad. Very sad.
Life comes at you fast when you are interviewing the nerdy kid who is vastly more successful than you are, made millions more in a short time span, more than you're likely to make in your entire career. Like, what must that feel like? And be called out for mocking the kid? Revenge must be so sweet. And what an awkward interview, but that's cool fun that was making the rounds on social media. Also making the rounds was this very awkward question asked to Mads Mikkelsen and director Nicolaj Arcei, who are making a 1700s Denmark, historical epic. And apparently it doesn't feature enough diversity.
So, Shell, we got
So you're a little bit into it. This is a cast and a Danish production, which is entirely Nordic. It therefore has some lack of diversity, you would say, as also new rules are implied
what
in Hollywood.
What are you on to?
Sorry, but
from the get-go.
From the get-go, there is set some rules of diversity in across the Atlantic for competing in the best picture, the equivalent to this competition. As I see it, you don't live up to these standards with this broad cast.
Stop it, please, I beg you! It's a sin! It's a sin! It's a sin!
I know you can't see the video, but imagine for the theater of the mind, Mads Mikkelsen, he's rolling his eyes when he's like, oh, right out of the gate with this bullcrap. Like, seriously, it's infectious. It started with, like, remember the recasting of Anne Boleyn? you know, the famously white Scottish queen who was killed. You know, they racially recast her, racially recast Cleopatra. You know, and just saying, like, pointing out that it was done poorly in the past, in primary example being John Wayne playing Genghis Khan, like, yeah, bad call, and is mocked roundly today, not revered as a classic, because that's a little bit silly. And so to do this and expect it out of a 1700s historical piece is absurd. But they even managed to accommodate some level of diversity while being respectful of history. This, according to the director.
Well, first of all, the film takes place in Denmark in the 1750s.
Yeah.
We do have a big plot line, you know, about a girl of color who is being subjected to racism.
Okay.
And, and which was very rare, any people of color in Denmark in Turkey, almost nobody. She was probably at the time the only one in the entire country of Denmark.
There you go. They found the only one probably in the entire country of Denmark in the 1700s, but by Jove, they worked that diversity into the picture. And it's still not good enough for the wokies. That's why you cannot bow to this crowd. And good on Mads, good on, you know, what seems like a growing number, hopefully, of Hollywood elites seeming to, you know, kind of test the waters with pushing back against the ridiculousness that has wormed its way in our entertainment. Stay tuned for more on Saturday Night on The Circle. We got a lot coming up.
Look, if you hate cops just because they're cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
Stay tuned to 93 WIBC.
You're listening to Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your behatted broadcaster, Ethan Hatcher. Thanks for tuning into the program. And I can't imagine a more unfortunate nomenclature given the cultural phenomenon sweeping the nation than Barbie Oppenheimer, but that is just the conundrum faced with one woman who's actually married to the third cousin of J. Robert Oppenheimer himself, and her given name being Barbara thus became the married name of Barbara Oppenheimer, Barbie Oppenheimer being her legal name. Isn't that like... That's quite a coincidence. And it's causing her problems whenever she goes to check in at hotel reservations because people think they're, you know, playing a joke, like, you're kidding, right? And like, nope, slide the driver's license over. It's that's Barbie Oppenheimer to you. I wonder if she covered her husband's eyes for the sex scene in Oppenheimer. Like, this, of course, is a reference to a clip that I played on a couple episodes ago of Saturday Night on the Circle. Check the podcast uploaded to saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm or wibc.com. This really controlling wife was making her husband, like, lean on her shoulder during Florence Pugh's sex scene. Very brief sex scene in the J. Robert Oppenheimer biopic, but who knows? Hopefully Barbie Oppenheimer isn't that controlling. She's also a fan of Barbie ever since she was six. Like, I guess a lot of girls in America, she had a Barbie, she had a Ken, she had a Midge and a Skipper. So she had the whole family of Mattel Productions there.
I'm just thinking with a name like Barbie, I don't think that you're that could be that prudish. That's kind of it.
Yeah, it's a good point. But yeah, I mean, again, considering like the way that they chose to market those two films, the Barbenheimer phenomenon, and many people did go to see the double feature. It's just like, what a crazy coincidence to actually be married to the third cousin of Oppenheimer and then first name Barbara or Barbie as a nickname. That's you're your own Barbenheimer. It's like a I'm own grandpa scenario. I guess maybe somebody creative could write a song about that. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. Before we close, also wanted to point out this Mexico marathon that has reportedly disqualified 11,000 participants of a nearly 30,000 person race. They checked in with their little electronic tagging devices and figured out that most of them didn't check in on the checkpoints and had veered significantly off course. They were taking mass transit. They were hopping in cars. They were basically doing anything other than running. And of course, the authority that put on the Mexico Marathon said that, you know, this is very disappointing. They're besmirching the event, the name of this event, by cheating. But can that really said to be the case when it's not the first time that this has happened? Like, this is apparently an ongoing tradition. 6,000 runners disqualified from the same 2017 race, 20% of the field failing to complete the full course. Organizers disqualified a further 3,000 runners following the 2018 race. So I guess like 10,000 runners. Like, this is a pattern at this point.
Can we have these organizers monitor our elections? They seem to be on it, right?
They could track the marathon runners, but not the votes. But what this reminded me of is, I mean, of course, the story kind of amusing in and of itself, but also the historical parallel between the 1906 Olympic marathon, which itself a storied disaster. I could go at length. One of the participants, Andorin Carvajal, he was the participant from Cuba. He actually placed fourth, but it was a multi-mile course. It had, you know, steep grading hills. Passerby in vehicles were kicking up dust in the road. At one point, multiple runners falling to the side of the course in convulsions, coughing up blood because of the silica and particulate matter tearing their lungs apart. Like, this was a brutal race. It was over 100 degree weather in the 1906 Olympic marathon. And again, the Cuban marathon participant, he was running in a full long sleeve shirt and pants and a hat. He's stopping at the side of the course to talk with participants. He got hungry. He stole a couple peaches from some people who were passing by in a car. He's like, "Hey, I'm hungry. Can I have your peaches?" And they're like, "No." And he grabbed two and ran off. He later went and stopped at an apple orchard and ate some apples while on the Olympic 1906 marathon that ended up being rotten at the core and gave him food poisoning. And so he's throwing up, took a nap, and still finished fourth. So there's parallels between the Mexican marathon and the 1906 Olympic race, and that just amuses me. Stay tuned to Saturday Night on The Circle. We've got more on the way. Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Saturday Night on the Circle podcast. Be sure to catch us live every Saturday night from 7 to 9 Eastern on 93 WIBC Indianapolis and watch us on the YouTube live stream where you can comment live with other fans.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle, where Democrat Mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, is waving the white flag under the enormous pressure of tens of thousands of illegal migrants flowing from the border to his city and overwhelming the infrastructure to support it. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm Ethan Hatcher, your bespectacled curmudgeon, producer Carl sitting opposite me. Beep, 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 beep. Pushing the buttons and doing the things to make the show function. Now, it's hilarious to watch Eric Adams cry that the city is on the verge of collapse when he invited the hordes of migrants to his doorstep by declaring it a sanctuary city, by leaning on that Democrat virtue signal. But apparently virtue follow-through is not their strong suit. It's, you know, they want the benefit of appearing to support policies that make them look good, but when the rubber meets the road, they fold like a damp old sock truck or a cheap suit because they don't have the means to support hundreds of thousands of people like Adoy. If only somebody had seen this coming and warned them about the disastrous effects of unlimited migration, the disastrous effects of Biden's border policy. They expected Republican border states to shoulder the burden of this, but now they're basically having to eat their words. The virtue follow through, whether they like it or not, is being forced upon them. And Eric Adams, oh, the city's on the verge of collapse.
I don't see an ending to this. This issue will destroy New York City.
Oh, no.
Destroy New York City. We're getting 10,000 migrants a month. One time we were just getting Venezuela. Now we're getting Ecuador. Now we're getting Russian-speaking coming through Mexico. Now we're getting Western Africa. Now we're getting people from all over the globe have made their minds up that they're going to come through the southern part of the border and come into New York City. And everyone is saying it's New York City's problem. Every community in this city is going to be impacted. We got a $12 billion deficit that we're going to have to cut. Every service in this city is going to be impacted.
Perhaps you think you're being treated unfairly?
No.
Good.
This deal is getting worse all the time.
And just like Lando Calrissian, Mayor Eric Adams invited the evil empire into Bespin, or the New York City, because he did this deal with the Biden administration. He, you know, supported the limitless flow of migrants over the border, and now his city is being overwhelmed as a result.
They bought their tickets. They knew what they were getting into. I say, let them crash.
But they don't want to live with the effects of the policy they invited. Democrat Mayor Kathy Hochul asking for a federal bailout, as is Eric Adams, because they need tens of millions of dollars to sustain this. But, you know, the Republican border states have been putting up with this for decades.
I have sent a letter to President Biden formally requesting immediate executive action in four key areas. First, expedited work authorization so we can get these people out of shelters and into the jobs. Financial support for federal housing vouchers, schools, healthcare, legal services, case management, and shelter for us to provide to these asylum seekers. The use of more federal facilities to construct new temporary shelters. And reimbursement for the cost of our National Guard, which have been on the ground at these shelters throughout the state.
We want more money. Yeah, more money.
More money from where?
Just more money, you know.
Note, of the four areas Democrat Governor Kathy Hochul wanted the Biden administration to address, none of them involved securing the border. They wanted bailouts. They wanted expanding federal facilities to handle the influx. They wanted them to be granted work visas right away. But what they didn't mention not even a hint of, is securing the border to stop the tide. That's what's so damning and what is really an indictment of their mentality. They want the influx because they desire remolding of the country. And of course, they're operating part and parcel with the moneyed business interests. You know, we've been through this rodeo a number of times where you get illegal workers into the country to artificially deflate labor value. That's, you know, it's part of the game. And it's really disgusting what's going on in front of our eyes that is being egged on in so many ways by the negligence of the Biden administration. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. Of course, Biden, not the only person that is failing. Also, unfortunately, thousands of Hoosier kids missing out on free breakfast and lunch, even though many families continue to struggle with hunger and food insecurity. So we have more Hoosier children that need the free food, but even though it's available, they're not taking advantage of it. And of course, I'm not blaming the kids. It's not their fault. It's the rotten parents who aren't taking, like, and this is the problem. Like, even when you have free meals, free school lunches and breakfast in the summer, they're not taking advantage of the program. And like, how do you legislate good parenting? You really can't. Like the social societal mechanism by which that used to transpire was some element and aspect of shame. We don't do that anymore. We enable bad parenting, and then to such a degree that even when you have these free programs, they are not taken advantage of. And the people who suffer the most is unfortunately the kids. Like, I'm not sure how you are able to recover from a bad setup like that. And of course, many, many do. There are examples of people who make a better life, even though they had bad examples from their parents growing up. But it's just sad to see when many of these kids are left behind. And then now these parents, instead of taking responsibility, then in turn blame others in their life for the failure. Like another example from Indiana schools, this from Washington Township, where parents are blaming the school for a racial achievement gap. Now, mind you, these schools are, glutted, inundated with Democrat operatives and teachers union fans. And so for these people to then say that the schools are racist, well, then what does that say about the Democrats who are staffing the schools? Yes, there's apparently a large educational gap, severe, according to the Indiana Department of Education. 18.6% of Hispanic students in Washington Township, 20.7% of Black students are proficient in the English language, compared to 68% of their white counterparts. 17% of Hispanic students and 13% of Black students are proficient in math, compared again to 60% of their white counterparts. So yes, quite a gap, but instead of parents stepping up and stepping forward to make sure that their children have an educational achievement, they're instead blaming the school.
To help close the gap, members of the group Concerned Residents of Washington Township are asking school board members to step up and hold educators accountable.
The belief of the group is that all kids deserve access to an excellent education. Race and income should not be barriers to achievement, whether it's achieving success in school or achieving long-term success. And they're concerned.
And they want to see the school system truly committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Like, we've got a cart before the horse scenario when you're blaming the educators for the educational attainment of the student. Like, clearly, there are some students who are benefiting from the educational structure of Washington Township. Unless it can be proven otherwise, I think that's a very serious accusation to say that there is some degree of racism being levied by the educators. Instead, the much more likely answer is a lack of participation at the home. And we need to really drill down on the cultural causes for that disparity instead of blaming the school for an disparity in educational attainment. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. We've got a lot more to come later in the show. Guest Rob Kendall is joining the program, and we're going to talk more about my crash in Pennsylvania, getting temporarily stranded while my motor fell out, and talk with his experiences on the vast open American roadways. Many of you know he used to have to travel back and forth to North Carolina, a 12-hour journey to his radio station, so we might get some good talk out of that. Stay tuned for the conversation coming up on Saturday Night on the Circle.
You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown, things will be great.
This is Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIPC.
You're downtown.
Thanks for tuning in to Saturday Night on The Circle. One of the more annoying facets of the modern world is those stupid little tablets that have shown up at basically every retail institution. They flip around, you got to tip. Now you're tipping in places you've never tipped before, and it's really hitting you in the pocketbook at a time when inflation is already taking its toll and Bidenomics is leaving you more stretched than ever before. So I thought it would be a worthy endeavor. Producer Carl sitting opposite me, beep, 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 pushing those buttons and doing the things to make the show function. If we covered where you should tip, where you shouldn't tip. That makes sense? You think our listeners get something out of that?
Yeah.
All right. This is per the Emily Post Institute online, where they said a lot of it common sense. If you go to like a salon or a barber or a restaurant where you're sitting down and ordering, that's a full service establishment. And you should be tipping for good service between 15 to 20%. That's fair. I think that's reasonable. For food delivery, suggests less, from about 10 to 15%. Now I'm starting to get in a little bit muddy territory there. You know, 15%, I'll do 10% on a delivery. Except if you're adding a delivery fee, then I might do less. You know, like I don't think the pizza pie adds much of a delivery fee, so I'll, you know, make sure to tip in 10 to 15% to your pizza guy. But you order from Grubhub or some of these online places, don't they add a substantial delivery fee to that?
I do believe so, although I don't go through Grubhub at all. So I don't
right,
know.
I rarely order from there, but I mean, I'll leave them a few dollars, but you know, 10%, geez, like, I don't know. Coffee shop, they say, on the other hand, that is up to you. Totally agree with that. I'm not tipping on the coffee, certainly not at a Starbucks. Maybe at a local coffee house, because those places tend to have pretty thin profit margins. So, you know, I'll toss a little bit of something in the tip jar. If I'm paying cash, you know, you got a little bit of leftover. That never hurts. But otherwise, I'm certainly not going to tip if I come and pick up the meal. Like, you order takeout and then they, you know, flip the little tablet over and you're expected to tip then. No. What about you, Carl? Do you have any tipping do's and don'ts?
I do tip because we are in the United States, but I like the Japanese.
You tip on takeout?
Well, no, but I'm just in general. I like the Japanese culture regarding this topic. Are you aware of what they think about tipping?
Enlighten us.
Zero.
Well, because it's built into the service.
It's part of the service. And I, as an American, the last time, it's been many years since I've been there, I left a tip. And here comes the store owner, the restaurant owner, like, don't do this. You insult me when you give a tip. And I'm like, now that's transparency in pricing.
I'm pretty sure it's the same way in France.
Yeah.
Tipping is the exception. Americans are the exception with this tipping BS, with this taxing BS, because also in most European countries, they add the tax into your purchase. It's really an American phenomenon where you know, come up to the register and then surprise, sales tax, you know, state tax, you know, transaction tax, and then it gets added on, and then you have to tip on top of it. It's just really nice and up forward when it's all built into the transaction, right? Am I wrong, Chad? Do we have any opinions on the tipping? Do we disagree? Do you think tipping should be included in the price? I'm curious to see what our listeners.
I was
going to
say
that.
For those that are listening, streaming into like New York City, they're insane over there. They tip their garbage collectors, so at the end of the year, they're expected to leave a gift for the garbage collector, and if you don't, maybe your garbage is not going to get picked up. It's that kind of stuff.
Now, per Emily Post Institute, they also suggested, speaking of New York, and but they got money to throw around in New York. They also said you should tip your valet. That I agree with. That's a bonus. Those people are usually paid in tips,
and, it's
and
also
you don't want them to take a dump in the trunk.
Yeah, it's an insurance policy.
There we go.
Yeah, nothing happens. Bad happens to your car.
So make sure to tip the valet. But there you go. Some tipping tips on Saturday night on The Circle. Maybe we'll have our own segment on manners, you know, like Susan Beckwith tipping policy here on Saturday night on The Circle. Probably not. I don't have enough to say about that. thanks for listening to the show, by the way. This was a crazy story. Speaking of Japan, and their tipping culture, this was something. Now, you'd think the Japanese would be up to date on this. Their factories were shut down, 14 of them, for about 2 days because they didn't have enough disk space in the system. So when the computer was doing routine maintenance, they kept, you know, it was cleaning out old data files, and then they topped off on the memory, and it, you know, had an error, and it took them 2 days to reset the system, probably because they needed to source out some more memory, even to boot the thing back up. And what's worse about this, I mean, not only is this a very easy thing to check into, like, guys, make sure you have enough disk space in your hardware.
Your software gives you alerts that, like, hey, we're running out of space.
Yeah, well, I guess whoever's job that was wasn't checking it. You'd think they would be up to date on that, but no. And these 14 plants in Japan are responsible for about, what was it, a third of Toyota's global production for the whole facility. And so that is talking about, you know, a multi-million dollar failure. Make sure to check your software, ladies and gentlemen, if you're running a manufacturing facility. My goodness, that is... That's an easy oversight, but you'd think they would be up to date on that. Now, here's another interesting story about the economy. A Ball State University economist, Dr. Hicks, he's predicting work-from-home hybrid structures are here to stay permanently. In the Hoosier State, 60,000 or fewer remote workers were in our workforce for the year 2019. That's grown, ballooning by about today, about 31% of the workforce overall. This is disastrous. It's mostly primarily popular with the young people, and this shows you how young and stupid most people are, because that is inviting a problem. Work into your home space is a disaster waiting to happen, paving the way for 24/7 work from home, on call, hellscape. Like, I don't want to be on call when I'm in my house. I want to be at work when I'm at work, go to the office, and when I'm home, I'm at home. I don't want to be on call from the boss 24/7, just a couple clicks away. Like, that is nightmarish. And then the idea that you're chained to your office. Your home is your office? No. What do you have to say about that, producer Carl?
You don't want to do the show from home?
Well, I know somebody here who would disagree, who likes to do the show from home. But no, I like to be in the studio. I like the atmosphere of this wonderful broadcasting facility that we have, even though the carpets are, you know, original to the facility in the 90s and probably haven't been vacuumed since then. Whatever. It's still a really nice view that's currently obstructed by the American flag. But otherwise, we get to look out on Monument Circle. We got really nice coworkers. Like, I want to come in and mingle, you know, and then I want to go home. I don't want, that's the other thing. I don't want the coworkers at my house. You know, the coworkers can be at work, and then the home is the home life. So mingling these two is a problem.
So in theory, I tend to want to work from home, in theory, but you're absolutely right. If you have a spouse, the concept of you being home all the time, it wears thin.
We'll see.
Very quickly, particularly when the boss. So my last job prior to coming back to WIBC, I was working for an LA company. So they work until 6, which is 9 p.m. So I was working until 10 p.m. And it's like, no, this is not working.
So you're on call at work and at home 24/7. This sounds like a nightmare scenario. Yeah. Again, going to show the young people really aren't using, you know, the full brainial capacity there.
As usual, the young people are ruining it for everybody, right?
And damn youngins! Waving my fist at the sky. Get off my lawn! Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on The Circle. More content to come. Rob Kendall coming in the studio. We're going to talk more about me being stuck in a strange and foreign land of Pennsylvania with motor issues and maybe some of his stories from the vast American roadways. Stay tuned for that.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Saturday Night on the Circle podcast. Be sure to catch us live every Saturday night from 7 to 9 Eastern on 93 WIBC Indianapolis and watch us on the YouTube live stream where you can comment live with other fans.
I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle.
Jingle, jangle.
As I go riding merrily along.
You're listening to Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
And that song, it's
hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Saturday Night on The Circle, where I am the Bohemian Codger, Ethan Hatcher. Don't miss the podcast uploaded to saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm, WIBC.com, and we're hop in the comments while we're streaming live on the YouTube. In my travels and experiences across the fruited plains of these United States, it was inevitable that eventually disaster would strike, as it did for me last week while rolling through the hills of Pennsylvania, temporarily stranding me in a strange and foreign land. Here to share stories of the vast American roadways is the weary wanderer and witty watering hole wizard. He's one half of the Kendall and Casey show. The one and only Rob Kendall joins
Ethan,
us on the show.
Ethan, hello. You get more skinny and beautiful every time I see you.
Well, I gained 2 pounds back on vacation. I let the diet go.
Do you know how good that is to go on a vacation and only gain 2 pounds? I'm serious.
Well,
do you know how many people would kill? I think Hammer gained about 37 when he was on vacation recently. You should applaud yourself.
But Hammer is blessed with the ability to pack it on and take it off with great rapidity.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's what I envy.
Yep.
You know. But anyway, so I had just the worst, and we talked about this a little bit in the first hour, just a miserable experience on my vacation to Pennsylvania. As I was pulling off one of the Oasis, I started hearing my engine
rattle. Well,
see, the telltale signs of transmission issues.
Well, see, this is why I don't fly, because think about it, Ethan, as bad as this was for you, you were able to pull over to the nearest applicable exit.
Yes.
And then begin to, with your feet on the ground and no traumatic anything to your person, examine the problem and come up with a solution, while not convenient, a solution that involved you not losing life or limb.
Although with the steep inclines and downgrades of the Pennsylvania hills,
well, that's
like the worst place to have engine trouble, or if your like motor is going out. Fortunately, mine did not. I was able to drive it to the destination and get there and leave it stranded at a repair shop off to the side of a Pennsylvania roadway. Yeah. So I'm returning. But it made me think you had kind of similar experiences, I imagine, going to and from North Carolina. Surely something equally as dramatic would have befallen Rob Kendall.
Okay, so yes, so I owned a radio station for about, 11-ish years in 30 minutes west of Wilmington. And so it was about a 12-hour drive. And the guy I owned the radio station with actually works here, producer Jason, and I would take turns. I would go for 2 weeks. I would drive down. We actually lived in the back of the radio station. We turned it into a house. And then I'd be back here for 2 weeks. So every 2 weeks, I would drive to the Atlantic Ocean and back. And I will tell you, I did the majority of those trips. I didn't go for 10 years, but a couple of those years, every 2 weeks, like clockwork. And I did it in a, I believe it was a 1997 Toyota Corolla that by the time I got done with it had roughly 300,000 miles on the car itself. Yes.
You pushed that as far as it could go. Now, with 300,000 miles, did you have any transmission problems? Anything blow up on the trip?
I was very lucky. Now, Jason had a van for many years, and Jason did have the van completely break down on him. So he was forced to do that. Now, luckily, here's the deal. Luckily, we had a mechanic who was one of our advertisers on the radio station, was a friend. So we were actually able, we had that 100 miles of towing, and he was close enough to the radio station. It was like 60 miles. We were able to get the thing towed to our advertiser's shop, and then he was able to fix the thing for he charges for parts, and that's it. And we were able to get the thing up and moving in. I did, on a trip home, because you'd leave very early in the morning, you'd try to get home before it got dark, so you'd leave early in the morning. It's 12-ish hour trip.
That's a grueling journey.
I did. It was fine, except in the summers, because this may come as a surprise to you that it's very hot in the South in the summers. At about 6 in the morning one time, a check engine light came on, and I was about an hour. I had just gone from the North Carolina to South Carolina border, so I just crossed the border. So you have like 11, you're not close enough to get back in a reasonable time, but yet, you know, you obviously don't want to keep going. I called the mechanic. He walked me through, asked me what I saw. He assured me there was no problem, and I drove the entire rest of the trip with a check engine light on. And he was right. I was able to make it home, but luckily I never actually had a car break down on me the entire time I was driving across the country. It was amazing.
That's incredible. That's very lucky.
Yes.
Now, how on earth did you ever come to own a radio station?
So
how did that come to be? You did.
Many people know that I, once upon a time, earned my living. I owned a company that streamed high school and college sporting events on the internet, and we had literally hundreds of people. This was pre-Facebook streaming everything, pre-YouTube streaming everything, and so if you wanted, and you never radio deal, you wanted a game streamed on the internet, I owned a company that did that. I'm like Zuckerberg, but without making all the money, because the money I made, I spent on a radio station. And anybody, if you're considering buying a radio station, don't consult your tax professional. And so we knew a guy that was one of our clients who said, hey, there's this radio station that's going up for sale. The guy who owned it was also in the housing market. And Ethan, you may recall what happened to the housing market in 2008. Yeah. And I think he needed to, at a reasonable fee, he wasn't in much of room to negotiate. And so we obtained a radio station, yes.
And then spent 10 years running it.
Yes.
Did it teach you something that you would later use in your broadcasting career here?
Yes, it did. Okay, so here's the things it taught me. So I made a large amount of money very quickly, very young, owning my streaming company. And Ethan, you know what I thought? Well, crap, I've got the Midas touch. I am an infallible businessman. No, I am not. That was number one, it taught me. Number two, don't get in the radio business. It's a recipe for disaster. And number three, Ethan, manage your money wisely. always have money.
That's just a good tip for life.
Squirreled away, because you never know when you're going to make a bad business choice.
Now, speaking of bad choices and roadway disasters, see, that's a good transition there.
Yes.
I wanted to cover an issue I imagine you have equally strong opinions on. This disaster that has been proposed by the chuckleheads over in the city council, changing the one-way roads crossing the city into two-way lanes. Now, I can't vouch for every roadway, but in particular, on the east side of Indianapolis, Michigan and New York, throughways across the city of Indianapolis. This is a idiotic idea. I cannot underscore enough how terrible the concept is, and they're bragging about how it's going to slow down traffic, because gridlock is the feature you want in a city, in these people's opinion.
Well, especially in a major metropolitan city, and I say this from my own experience having run a non-major metropolitan city, but a thriving community in central Indiana. I was once told by, when we were considering a sign and zoning ordinance, and the chief of police, because obviously speed limits, you know, no turn on reds, whatever. Those are huge parts of traffic flow. So this is part of the sign and zoning ordinance. And the chief of police once said the number one goal in a sign and zoning ordinance as it relates to traffic should be to keep the traffic moving as often as you can. Because he said, people can be moving slowly, but as long as they're moving, they have hope they will soon be at their destination or out of this slow-moving conundrum they are in. If the traffic is not moving, then they lose all hope, and that's when people get angry and turn into, you know, unpredictable people. And so the goal of whatever you do, whether it's one-way streets, two-way streets, no turn on red, whatever, should be a responsible movement of traffic as often as possible. And yet you have seen the city of Indianapolis take the exact opposite approach, whether it's the red line or, as you're talking about, with these new potential restrictions, etc., because it's not about the flow of movement to them, which is what it should be. It's about bizarre leftist fantasies in many cases.
I'm glad you mentioned the red line, because that does tie into this discussion for a couple of different reasons. Also a poorly conceived and executed concept from beginning to finish, and also to allure more federal money.
We're in the money.
Indianapolis, what'd they get? More than $20 million for the red line, and that's exactly what's happening with this proposal. You had Andre Carson and, of course, Buttigieg rocking everywhere, make an appearance with the city council, and they're giving $25 million in freebie federal dollars to enact this atrocity on the city of Indianapolis. This is a bad idea. I've heard it justified because it's going to slow down traffic as if gridlock was a feature, and then also, well, that's going to eliminate the people who are driving the wrong way on one-way roads. Newsflash, idiots! They'll drive the wrong way on two-way roads as well. They do, frequently.
Well, and you know, Ethan, because you are a real estate tycoon here in central Indiana, and
aspiring.
While you're not as aged as I am, you've driven around the city for many, many years. You're a man of your 30s now. One of the pre-Joe Hogsett, one of the selling points of living in and working in downtown was the easy flow of movement.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me, as a person who drove from the west side in a west side suburb, it was a very easy 25-minute venture to downtown. And then once you were downtown, and I'm talking 8, 9, 10 years ago, you had a pretty easy flow of movement for a major metropolitan city, especially compared to other places like, say, a Chicago or New York or whatever.
Compared to anywhere. I mean, I've driven through some of these cities. I'm sure you have as well. I've driven through Chicago. I've driven through New York. I've driven through Cleveland. I've driven through Cincinnati and other major cities. Like, it is a nightmare on the whole. We are incredibly blessed to have a navigable city like Indianapolis.
There was a non-existent problem, which was the flow of movement, which existed in downtown, and they have made it into a problem by the policies of the Hogsett administration. I mean, think about that. I mean, am I wrong? I drive here to work now. You drive here because you live here. Am I right or am I wrong? They took a non-existent problem and turned it into a problem by their policies.
Yes. No, absolutely. They've created a problem. I mean, the throughway on College Avenue has been mutilated. isolated because of the red line, and now they're getting ready to do it with the one way through through fares to the city. This is problematic, as the left likes to say.
Yes, that's correct, and it's of their own doing, and it's because of this weird obsession with buses and forcing. I mean, they really don't want. Ultimately, what this is all about is it's not
money.
Well, but it's about they don't want people to have free flow of movement, because free flow of movement is freedom as an individual.
Yes,
and if you are confined to having to take public transportation of some sort, then it is another area where you are beholden to the government.
Yes, you have brought us full circle and connected us again with the red line, which I appreciate, because I was going to highlight that very thing. By limiting your movement, it's forcing you into their ridiculous scheme.
100%, absolutely.
Disastrous.
Yes. But you are not disastrous. You are a national treasure, and the people are better off for having heard you every single Saturday.
Thank you, Rob.
That's what we do.
You're listening to 93 WIBC Saturday Night on the Circle. More on the way.
I'm looking over a four-leaf clover that I overlooked before.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle. Just wrapping things up here on a beautiful Saturday, September evening. Thanks for tuning into the show. Podcasts uploaded to WIBC.com. Saturday Night on the Circle.fireside.fm. And of course, you can always join us while we're streaming live on the YouTube. Producer Carl, I'll ask you a question. What do you think is the least amount of money you would need to retire on? I'll let you simmer on that for a moment while I talk about this bus driver from the Louisville area of Kentucky, where lottery officials announced James Cohen won $100,000 on the Powerball. He won a $50,000 prize with a 2x multiplier for $100,000, taking home $71,500 after taxes. The day he won the lottery, he called up his boss at the school bus depot. He's like, I'm retiring. Now, more power to him. I you know, apparently he'd been planning on retiring for a while, but you better be investing that $71,000 mighty wisely, because that does not go very far, no, very fast in this modern world, let alone to retire on.
What state was this?
This is Kentucky.
Oh, I don't think it's Kentucky.
I don't think, well, look, I don't think he's living in a shack. And even then, $71,000 is mighty slip to retire on. Like, I don't know.
To answer your question, I think you need at least a mil.
Okay, yes. Yeah, that was going to be my answer. Like, a minimum of $1 million, because you could live for a couple of years. It might be thin, but you could live for a couple of years just paying bills strictly on the cash, and then use the remaining cash flow, hopefully, for some longer-term investments, and then, get some other cash flow. But, yeah, even then, you wouldn't be able to fully retire. You'd just have to manage your money in a way that paid for your lifestyle. So you'd be investing a lot of work in that. Like, life is expensive these days. Life is expensive. But I think I need to win at least $1 million to retire on. $100,000. Because even then, $1 million is not that $1 million. What? I guess you'd be getting the equivalent of $700,000 back. So you need like $1.5 million maybe in order to successfully retire. Like, God.
I'd like that. That dilemma, though.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I'd like to, like, well, you know, I don't know how much it would take, but I'd like the opportunity.
I can think about it. Yeah, well, you know, I guess keep playing the Powerball. It could happen to you. Thanks for listening to 93 WIBC. Before we come to a close, this was a crappy situation for a Delta flight from Atlanta to Barcelona. Apparently, they had a bout of explosive diarrhea with one of the passengers, and I don't know how this got all over. I mean, the way they made it sound, it got all over the cabin. Like, what's going on with you? What did you eat? Did you get, like, the wrong Taco Bell? And they were reporting this on the intercom for their communicating with the traffic control tower.
Negative. It's just a biohazard issue. We've had a passenger who had diarrhea all the way through the airplane, so
oh my goodness,
they want us to come back to Atlanta.
Humans!
Oh. So this was a two, you know, they were more than 2 hours into the flight when they had to circle back and then take another plane. Could you imagine being stuck in that tin can with the stench? It's just wafting through, and then it's recycled air. You can't even open a window. It's like getting cycled back through the filtration system. Poor guy. I mean, they said it was some kind of medical issue. I dare say so, but they didn't specify what. Again, I'm going to blame Taco Bell. It's probably an airport Taco Bell.
I hope Taco Bell's not a sponsor.
I'm bad with the corporate sponsors, yeah. Carl, except for King's Hawaiian,
yeah.
which we had earlier, and maybe building a factory in just south of Edinburgh here in Indiana. So King's Hawaiian, delicious dinner rolls. If you want to be a sponsor of Saturday Night on the Circle, we won't besmirch your name like Delta or Taco Bell or Enterprise.
Yeah, Enterprise.
The list goes on. I better get off before I get in trouble legitimately. Thanks for listening to the show, ladies and gentlemen. As always, it's fun coming into the studio and just having a chat with you. I have a blast on Saturday Night on the Circle. Producer Carl, of course, is phenomenal. And this Saturday has been really fun because, like I said at the beginning of the show, I was not 100% for sure that I was going to make it back to Indianapolis in time to do the broadcast. So I'm just pleased that I was able to make it.
We're glad that you're back safe and sound.
And I leave you with my parting words of wisdom. As always, wherever you are, whoever you're with, whatever you're doing, remember that life is a state of mind. And I'll see you, ladies and gentlemen, next time on Saturday Night on the Circle.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Saturday Night on the Circle podcast. Be sure to catch us live every Saturday night from 7 to 9 Eastern on 93 WIBC Indianapolis, and watch us on the YouTube live stream where you can comment live with other fans.